published a tentative ruling on Wednesday, proposing to overrule the demur and require the county to file an answer. Mr. Greer, I assume that that tentative ruling is satisfactory to you?
Yes, Your Honor, petitioners believe that the decision is well-reasoned and submit on the tentative.
Okay. Mr. Biak, I'll be pleased to hear from you, sir.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. I will try to be brief. The county submits that the facts alleged in the First Amendment petition concerning the sheriff's instructions to his investigators about how to conduct the Dachau investigation can only lead to the conclusion that those instructions are exempt records of an investigation as a matter of law. In its tentative ruling, the court found, quote, petitioners allege that the instructions given by Sheriff Gore to the independent panel of officers are not protected by Government Code Section 6254F. These facts, which the court must liberally construe and accept as true, are sufficient to state a claim under the CPRA. That's end quote. We respectfully disagree. We contend that the referenced allegation is not a factual allegation, but a conclusion of law, which the court is not required to accept as true. Rather,
Hold on.
Sure.
Paragraph 45 is the source of that that allegation, but factual allegations are in, I think, paragraph 20 and 21 of the amended petition. Regarding the nature of the disputed nature of those instructions. Why does that not create a factual issue, not amenable to resolution on demur?
21-22, don't look like I'm looking at the petition right now, Your Honor. I gotta say, I don't see anything about the sheriff's instructions in those paragraphs.
Maybe I misremembered the paragraph numbers. Maybe it's 16 and 17.
No, the court's correct. It's paragraph 20, Your Honor.
Paragraph
20.
1021,
yes.
Paragraph 20.
20 and 21.
I thought it was that, but in any event. So paragraphs 20, 21, and 45, to me, set forth a disputed factual issue that renders this piece of the case not amenable to resolution on demur, and that's the problem that I have. So maybe you can address that.
Sure. It's a little bit challenging, Your Honor, because the allegation doesn't really say much about what the actual instructions are or what the written record of these instructions, if they exist, would contain. So we're left with this.
That's a very good point, Mr. Diakon. Isn't that the reason that I can't sustain this demur? I don't even know if the instructions that are the subject of those allegations were verbal or in writing, do I?
Correct. But here's the thing, Your Honor. Our position is that there's nothing in the petition, there are no factual allegations in the petition that would ever lead to the conclusion that a sheriff's instructions to his investigators concerning the conduct of an investigation with the sheriff's department, there are no circumstances where those would be discoverable if they exist. And plaintiffs certainly haven't suggested what those circumstances are. What we have is an allegation that the sheriff gave his investigators instructions about an investigation. The statute says that records that exempt from the Records Act are, quote, records of, and I'm cutting out some stuff, but the key language.
Don't cut out stuff. It's never a good idea to paraphrase the legislature. Every word in the statute is important.
Well, then it's a long statute, Your Honor, a very long statute, and I wouldn't want to belabor the point that, but the gist of it is, records of investigations conducted by a state or local police agency. And there's no question that, the sheriff here is a local police agency, and there's no question that there was an investigation. So the only question we come to that remains to be determined is whether a sheriff's instructions to his investigators are records of that investigation. And I frankly don't know how they can be anything else. And counsel has, for the petitioners, is not.
Stop right there. Stop right there and tell me the case that so holds, that holds as a matter of law, that directives directives on how to conduct an investigation or what to investigate constitute records of an investigation.
Your Honor, I did not find that case. There's no case saying the other way. Our point is that under the, then because there is no law, the court then has to look at the language of the plain language of the statute and apply the statute to the alleged facts. The alleged facts here are that the sheriff gave instructions to his investigators. At some point, Your Honor, if we come back on the merits, this is still going to be the question, is under that statutory language, is there any circumstance under which a sheriff's directions or instructions to his investigators concerning an ongoing criminal investigation, is there any circumstance in which that would be not exempt? I know of no such case. And so it comes down, and the petitioner certainly has not cited such a case. And so we're coming down to the plain language of the statute and how the alleged facts apply, or how that language is applied to the alleged facts. It's really pretty simple. And I think it's hard to argue that that is not a question of, a pure question of law. That's statutory interpretation. It's application of the statutory language to the alleged facts. And so that's our problem with the tentative, is we don't believe that's a factual allegation. We think the plaintiffs have essentially said, well, this is how the effect the law has under these circumstances. And they don't get to make that law up. They don't get to say that. And so it may be the public agency's burden in a case like this to burden of proof to show that the exemption applies. I agree it is. But we contend that we have done that here. Because again, based on the plain language of the statute and the alleged facts, I cannot conceive personally, I've not seen any authority to this effect, how a sheriff's directions to his investigators could not be considered, quote, records of an investigation conducted by the sheriff's department. And I haven't heard anything from the plaintiffs, from the petitioners to that effect, except that they want to, you know, they want to survive to fight another day, which I understand, but I really do think this is a pure question of law that can be decided by the court. So we would request that you reconsider your ruling under the city's thoughts in mind, and respectfully request that the demur be sustained.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Greer?
Your Honor, as counsel pointed out, there is no case, and there's no law, no statute that specifically defines what an investigatory file is. That means what an investigatory file is and what it encompasses is in itself a question of fact that this court will have to determine eventually before this case is resolved.
Let me ask you this. Yeah. What information am I going to get in the briefing between now and January that I don't have right now?
On that
very point.
Yeah, we're going to have depositions taken of sheriff's officers identifying how they handle investigatory files, what they include, how they're organized, how they're classified within the sheriff's department. And we'll have expert testimony that will be saying what is considered to be part of the investigatory file and what's not. There's not a lot of law in this area, as Mr. Diak knows. And so we've done an analogy with attorney-client privilege. We know the attorney-client privilege is very broad. Communications between the client and that. But also things like the fact that you're retained and what your task is as an attorney to do. That's not privilege. That's not part of that communication.
This isn't a privilege, though.
It is of sorts. It's by analogy. I think
no, it's
wrong.
Not.
It's a work product.
It's a statutory exemption. That's not the same as work product, and it's not the same as a privilege.
But it appears to be codified, and Your Honor, actually, this, what we're talking about right now, does, is what needs to be resolved in this case. It needs to be applied to the facts of the case. I don't think it can be done in a vacuum. And so that's what we're going to ferret out between now and the time for the hearing, through discovery and through expert testimony. In addition, Mr. Diaz.
Let me stop you and ask you about that.
Yeah.
In an ordinary writ case, we go based on the administrative record, and if it ain't in the administrative record, it doesn't exist. I didn't make that up. There's a case that says that. You're telling me that this is not a case like that, and that there's going to be expert testimony?
I think there will be. I think there'll need to be in order to determine what an investigatory file is, Your Honor. We're going to have law enforcement officials who understand the business, understand what the files are, understand what the parameters of those files are, and where those boundaries are, so what's classified as the quote-unquote investigatory file. It hasn't been defined anywhere. It'll probably be defined in this case. Your Honor will probably be the one making that decision.
No, it will be the fourth PCA division.
Well, yeah. Hopefully affirming a decision from Your Honor. And so that is a question of fact. And even more, Mr. Diaz raised an important point, and that is he can't think of a situation where an instruction from the sheriff to his underlings would not be part of that investigatory file. I can say,
well, don't call them underlings. They're deputies.
Excuse me. This is his officers. The officers of the sheriff's department. It's when it is fraudulent. This court isn't going to step in and protect a deception on the public. This may require in-camera review by Your Honor or protect any privileges or exemptions that may exist.
Sir,
we allege in the complaint.
Sir, hold on.
Yeah.
Where does it say I get to do an in-camera review?
That will need to be briefed, Your Honor. That will need to be briefed. That's going to be when.
Well, no, you've analogized it to a privilege,
mm-hmm.
And the law is crystal clear. You don't test a privilege assertion with in-camera review. That's a compelled disclosure of a privilege communication, and it cannot be done.
Well, to determine whether it falls within the privilege, the court can review it.
Nope.
In camera?
No. The Supreme Court has held forth on this.
In this case, with the exemption, that's going to be the distinction, then, Your Honor. Because the CPRA is designed so that the public can have access to the truth and be able to determine the people that are governing them, that they've elected, are acting honestly and being forthright. This is the only avenue for the public to get access to those records and that information. If it comes to a question of whether there was a fraud perpetrated, and we believe that the facts do show that there was a fraud perpetrated by Sheriff Gore, and that he lied to the public, he lied to the family, and said that he was going to do this new investigation, when in fact it was just a setup. It was giving lip service to an investigation, and the real instructions were designed to have one result. So he told his officers one thing, and he told the public another thing.
I read that petition.
But they can't stand behind that shield and use it as a sword. Remember, Your Honor, we're focusing right now on one part of the case, and that is the instructions, which I think the court ruled on properly. The other part of the case is the waiver issue,
yeah.
Which is a question of fact in and of itself. We have a sheriff here who is in writing, we attach the letter to the complaint, and says to the family, under 6254 of the government code,
sure.
I don't have to give you this.
I'm not going to address waiver today.
Okay.
I said that in the evidence.
But that's a question of fact also. And so, Your Honor, I think there are questions of fact throughout this that can't be determined at the pleading level. And that's why it needs to go to a full hearing.
Mr. Diaz, last word.
Your Honor, thank you. Mr. Greer apparently intends to have expert witnesses come in and tell the court how to interpret the law. That's not going to be permitted. We will object vociferously to that. This really is a straightforward statutory interpretation case. Mr. Greer wants to relitigate the civil case. He wants to talk about fraud and deception. This is a California Public Records Act case. It's a very narrow issue, especially since, at least for the purposes of their demur opposition papers, the petitioners stated that they are only now seeking these instructions. And I don't think we're going to be, there's going to be any place for expert witnesses in this trial or in this hearing. And lastly, This, Mr. Greer filed this, you know, petitioners filed this petition last, in 2020 at some point. They served the county, I can't recall exactly when, in March or April. We've had two demurs pending for some 6 months since then. And now he's saying with the hearing just in January, he wants to do all this discovery, including Thanksgiving and the Christmas holiday. I think we're gonna be, if that's the case, we're gonna be back in here asking for a continuance. I don't know why this hasn't been going on all summer.
Well, I'll deal with that if, when, and as it becomes an actual problem. Okay, thank you for your thoughtful comments today, both of you. Passionately delivered and thoughtfully delivered. The matter is submitted for decision. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Item 40, Renteria versus Faye Service, and thank you, Madam Recorder. Item 40, Renteria versus Faye Servicing LLC.